your paradise. If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice. So much for the angels, so much for glory. If the prophets had seen you coming, they'd have written a different story.
Welcome to the Sydney Atheist Podcast. To find out more about the Sydney Atheists, visit www.sydneyatheists.org. I'm your host, Jason Brown, and with me are Ian Wolfe.
Hello.
And Dave the Happy Singer.
Hello.
On this episode, we will be discussing the topic of circumcision.
A never-ending stretch of tedium and strife, and the tales of the father are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you. So much for heaven, and so much for you.
What's circumcision?
Do you need to ask?
No.
It's a delicate topic.
Oh.
Perhaps we should ask our resident Jewish person.
And now over to the resident spokes Jew, Ian Wolfe.
Circumcision is removing the foreskin of a man's penis. Well, of a baby boy's penis, usually. But technically, it's just removing the foreskin from a male human's penis. It's a traditional religious custom amongst Jewish people and from other Middle Eastern faiths, some Islam as well. It sometimes gets extended to women who don't even have foreskins. They get the clitoris, and it's called female circumcision, but it's a whole other area.
I've heard that described as FGM, female genital mutilation.
Well, they've also called male circumcision male genital mutilation.
Indeed.
MGM.
And that's one of the things that brought up this topic, because I had an argument last night on a Facebook page, Stop the AVN, by strange chance, about the medical benefits or purported medical benefits of circumcision. And that descended somehow into the idea that I was, and I quote, taking a shit on someone's religion. I wasn't at all. I was trying to stick to the medical benefits. But this is what's brought this up and why I wanted to have a bit of a chat about it with you, chaps.
The particular thing, as I remember from the thread, that upset this lady who claimed you were shitting all over her religion, even though she admitted herself not to be religious.
Hmm.
She was a secular Jew, but Jason was shitting all over her non-religion. and the thing that upset her was your description of circumcision as genital mutilation.
Except that wasn't me. That was actually somebody else.
Was it really?
Yes.
That's why you got in trouble.
Well, then you're not getting the credit for shitting all over a religion.
Exactly.
Okay. So
do you think it's an unreasonable description?
I don't think
genital
it's an unreasonable
mutilation.
The problem I have with it is that it's being done to babies who can't consent. If it's being done to adults who choose to have it, then fair enough, you do what you like, because you can have a functional penis without a foreskin, but there's no need to lose it. Now, there's supposed to be two medical benefits that I've heard of from foreskin removal. One is if you're a nomadic desert-dwelling tribe, then you will get less sand caught in the foreskin and causing infection than if you don't have it done. And perhaps that was the origin. I mean, in the myth, it's instead of wearing a particular colour or wearing a hat, as they ended up doing anyway, they removed the foreskin to show that they were part of that religion.
Yes.
So, you know,
so anybody who was looking inside their pants,
yes, could tell.
Would be able to tell from the distance what tribe they were from.
Of course, pants were invented in those days. This is 5,000 years ago.
Oh, but so the Jews all walked around naked.
They wore robes like everybody did.
Well,
so they could easily whip it out.
Yeah,
right.
But no pants.
I've heard it described as one of those. What is the term? It's an expensive display of tribal fealty.
But there's a problem with
look
the expense.
At what I'm willing to go through to be part of this tribe.
But you're not.
Kind of a thing.
You weren't asked because it's
exactly.
done to you as a baby, only a few days old. You have no choice in the matter. But maybe that's part of it.
Well, my position on this was that it's absolutely fine if once you're of the age when you can actually actively consent to a thing like this, it's absolutely fine if you go and do it, but you really shouldn't be doing it to children. The person I was debating with then took the line that I would be denying her child a full participation in his Jewish culture, which I found to be odd, because being a child, he's already not fully participating in his Jewish culture. I would have thought, and I don't fully understand how it all works, but I would have thought that you only fully participate after your bar mitzvah, isn't it?
Okay. You can fully participate as a child in Jewish culture before your bar mitzvah, because after all, after your bar mitzvah, you're a man. So you're not a child anymore in Jewish culture, you're a man. But having your circumcision doesn't really come to the fore until you have sex. Because no one's going to see it until you have sex. So if you're at an all-Jewish boys' school and you're not circumcised, it might stand out if the other boys are staring at each other in the change rooms, which in which case, what are they doing instead of changing? But if you're in a public...
You change and stare at penises at the same time, Ian. Trust
this
me.
This is the voice of experience.
If you're not at a Jewish school, and there are very few Jewish schools, most of the schools that Jewish children go to are, in fact, state schools or Christian schools, then there's going to be a variety of circumcised and uncircumcised children, because it's not just religious people that get their children circumcised. It used to be the norm in Australia that all boys were circumcised.
Really? Yes. And I know it's currently the norm in many parts of the US, and that... I'm not really sure. I think it's sort of an overstatement of the medical benefits, perhaps.
Oh, no, I have a story on that.
Oh, do you?
I know exactly where it comes from.
Oh, excellent. This is what we've got you here for, Ian.
Yes. No, I looked into this because I found a throwaway line in New Scientist once that said that circumcision became popular in the US because of cornflakes.
Okay.
And I had to look into it. So
John
I did
Henry
some
Kellogg.
Research.
Mm. Anti-masturbation activist.
Exactly.
From the Sanitarium movement, from where the Australian company Sanitarium also stems.
That's right.
There was a lot of serials going on in the Seventh-day Adventist world in those days.
So how is it, you think, that cornflakes could possibly be connected with masturbation and circumcision?
John Henry Kellogg invented cornflakes and also thought people should be circumcised so that they wouldn't wank so much.
Yes,
well,
this is
it
more
was
or less.
Any of his business.
But
this
the reason he invented cornflakes to prevent masturbation is that there was a theory that bland things would blunt the appetite. That if you had really bland food, then you would be less hungry. And by extension, because your appetite for food was down, your appetite for sex would be down, and so you'd masturbate less.
Well, surely you should just marry a bland woman.
But this won't help teenage boys.
Think about Margaret Thatcher.
I mean, don't forget, they're obsessed with the teenage boys. So what actually happened in the US, because the cornflakes didn't work, they're still sold, but they didn't quite work.
And they are kind of delicious, especially when coated with sugar.
So what they did was they introduced circumcision. Originally, it was done to teenage boys to discourage them from masturbation in the US. And then they started doing it to babies as a matter of course. Now, it turns out there is another benefit from circumcision other than the sand in the foreskin. It doesn't prevent masturbation at all, because I've got a great...
And I'm living proof.
I was going to say, I've got a quote here somewhere from someone saying, only coma prevents masturbation.
That's a really great quote.
I'll have to find who said that. I can't find the quote immediately. But basically what they've found is that, look, apart from the fact that masturbation is actually good for your health, right? Erections are good for erections.
Keeps your wrist strong.
It does all sorts of good things for you. But outside of that, it turns out that there's a 60% protection from HIV. If you're circumcised, you're 60% less likely to catch AIDS than if you're not circumcised. And the reason they think this happens is that there's a very large number of cells in the foreskin that have the receptors that HIV latches onto. So you're less likely to let the virus into your body if you're circumcised.
Have they controlled for variables like if most people who are circumcised are Jewish and most people who are Jewish don't sleep around, then you would expect to see a correlation between incidence of HIV infection and the practice of circumcision, but it isn't a causal link.
Well, that's right, except,
I mean,
of course...
What I'm asking is, have they established a causal link?
And the answer is, they seem to have, because there are populations that are not Jewish, as we're discussing. A lot of Australians, British, Americans, all over the world, there are large groups that practice circumcision for either unreasonable medical reasons or cultural traditions, or just they thought it would be healthier, easier to keep the penis clean or something like that, right? Little reasons like this that weren't quite rational. So there's a big population they could test it on. What they found is, lo and behold, the risk was down by 60%. So it didn't stop you getting AIDS. It's not protection, but the chance is lower. This is strong enough that the World Health Organization has recommended circumcision for adult men in Africa in the highest AIDS incidence regions, and it seems to be helping. Now, it doesn't stop you getting AIDS, so it doesn't mean you can stop using condoms, but it means if you don't use a condom, you're less likely to get infected, so the odds are slightly in your favour.
Now, this was what initially sparked the conversation that I got into last night. There was a link that the CDC is recommending. The wording was mandatory circumcision in certain circumstances, and a particular group of which we're all probably aware, the Australian Vaccination Network, were having a bit of a rail against this because they hate anything that's mandatory. They hate anything that seems to be good medically as well, but let's not talk about that. But there's also some reduction in HPV, human papillomavirus, transmission. It's not as big, I don't think, as the 60% reduced chance with HIV, but it's still quite significant. And the AVN, the Australian Vaccination Network, are very much against the Cervarix vaccine for HPV, and this all ties into their sort of conspiratorial beliefs.
See,
and nonsense.
There's a way around that, because yes, I've seen someone on Hungry Beast did a story on this. Men can get the anti-HPV vaccination, right?
Yes.
But it's very expensive for them to do so. Like, there were subsidies for women to get it,
mm-hmm.
because they would be protected against dying from cervical cancer, but there weren't subsidies to stop men from transferring it to women. And perhaps there should be if they're looking at it in an epidemiological situation.
And also, mildly uncomfortably, it causes anal cancer as well. So if you are a man who likes men, then you probably would want to get an HPV vaccine.
But even if you just care about the people you have sex with,
well,
you don't want to make them ill, and you certainly don't want to cause their death.
Absolutely.
So surely, and if you are interested in the health of your population and you're willing to subsidize the vaccine, you shouldn't be gender biased. You should surely support both genders who choose to get vaccinated.
Well, that's the problem with the simplistic thinking we see over at the AVN, but we're going to go slightly off topic again. So.
Well, it just means that you don't have to get circumcised to stop spreading HPV as a man.
That's right.
You can get the vaccine instead.
Mm. So there is an alternative for the HPV factor, but the HIV factor, we don't have a vaccine
yet. There's no vaccine yet.
And we don't have very particularly effective treatments. There's lots of drug cocktails and things like that that'll keep
that's
you alive
right.
longer, but there's no actual cure.
No.
So that's quite an important medical benefit, then, of circumcision under certain circumstances where you're at risk.
Well, the thing is, if it's good enough for the Africans, why isn't it good enough for everyone else?
That's a good point.
Mm.
Oh, dear. For the benefit of listeners, I'm being shown pictures from my right.
Pictures of? Because I can't see it from this side.
Dear, oh dear. This is what happens when
is
you
discuss circumcision. Is this circumcision gone
wrong? Yeah, well.
No,
not at all.
Just normal.
Just normal, from the healthy penises.
We're looking at the Wikipedia page.
Just normal.
So that's the other thing, of
Cox.
Course, that we haven't discussed, is that it can go horribly wrong. That one of the arguments against circumcising babies, who, after all, unless being Jewish, they're probably not sexually active as babies.
Now, if they were Catholics,
they don't
Someone
need the protection. Exactly, they don't need the protection as babies. There is a risk that the babies. There's a very large risk that they'll hemorrhage during the surgery, and traditionally, babies are not anaesthetized during the circumcision, and it's very painful. Now, the other thing is, they might argue that babies... There used to be an argument that you don't need to anesthetize the baby because, after all, magically, babies don't
babies
feel pain. They say, oh, the nervous system's not well-developed enough for them to feel pain. This turns out not to be based on any science at all. Babies, as you can find out when you hear them cry when they get hurt, babies hurt.
Absolutely.
Babies feel pain.
And there is another...
Having your penis sliced as a baby boy might be the most painful thing that you can experience.
Yes, but there's also another risk as well, and that was highlighted in the case of a Moyle?
Yes,
a Moyle. In New York, who was actually transmitting herpes to the babies he was circumcising.
Oh dear, and he was using the traditional method, wasn't he?
He was using the traditional method, yes.
Explain this, Jason.
A baby's penis in his mouth.
Yes, when the incision is made, traditionally, the presiding rabbi or moel is meant to sort of suck the blood away with his mouth. I don't know quite what the significance of it is. I had some sort of covenant with God thing.
I think probably to do with the baby not bleeding to death.
Could be that too. I doubt it though. There's probably better ways than.
Well,
that.
See, 5,000 years ago, what would there have been? There was no medicine.
There were improvised bandages. I think it's kind of a bit unnecessary. But anyway, there was at least one fatality from this New York-based moel, and he wasn't the only one still using this practice. In fact, this practice is still in use all around the world in Jewish communities, and it's a bit kind of worrying.
It's indefensible. Yes. In the 21st century, it's indefensible to at least for the oral contact.
Mm.
I can't see that any good reason for that at all. And I don't think most Jewish people know about that either.
That's an extreme example, but there is also the lack of sterile technique among some. So, you know, anything could really be transmitted around in that way. Blood to blood is one of the most effective ways of transmitting an infection. So.
It sounds pretty awful. And the other thing, of course, is that there are lots of men who, well, when I say lots, in America, there are men who are unhappy that they were circumcised as children that do consider it to be mutilation rather than having adjust to it of being normal. And they've attempted to reverse it. So there's all these various techniques for regrowing your foreskin.
Techniques and devices. Now, there was a Penn and Teller bullshit episode in this, wasn't there?
There was.
Yes, that was an interesting episode, I seem to recall.
Absolutely. So go out there and check out Penn and Teller's bullshit and check out their circumcision episode.
Quite fascinating.
Fascinating stuff. So, look, is it something that should be compulsory for children, for babies to have? The only argument I could possibly work out for making it compulsory is the AIDS argument. And even then you say, okay, should you choose as an adult or should you choose as a teenager to have this done before you're sexually active? Well, the problem becomes most teenagers aren't exactly very thoughtful before they have sex. And the chances are it's not going to be protected sex with a lot of teenagers. Mm. So are they at risk if they're not already circumcised more than they otherwise would be?
Well, my take on it is that you should get it done at a later age when you can actually consent. And I agree with you that the medical benefits don't really accrue until you're of sexual maturity. But as well, I do also agree that when you're a teenager, your first sexual experiences tend to maybe sneak up on you a bit. So you're probably not very well prepared. So there is a small argument perhaps to be made for doing it earlier.
I agree, it's not a strong argument.
I don't think at infancy...
It's not strong enough.
I don't think you can quite justify at infancy, other than on cultural grounds, and that's really the big problem.
Well, I agree, I don't think you're entitled to do cosmetic changes to your baby surgically at all.
Well, you can't tattoo your baby. You can't pierce its ears.
Although, are you sure?
That has happened.
I've seen babies with pierced ears.
It does happen.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that there are, if not laws, then at least rules and guidelines against it. It's not really a very sensible thing to do, and not a very nice thing to do. I mean, pierced ears are relatively trivial, but to tattoo your baby would be kind of bad.
And yes.
At least a tattoo is relatively easily reversible if it's a small one.
You
can get it lasered off. You can't get your foreskin lasered back on, can you?
No, it's not quite as debilitating to have a tattoo.
No.
Hold on, say that again.
It's not quite as debilitating to have a tattoo as to have your foreskin chopped off.
How is it debilitating to have your foreskin chopped off?
Does it not reduce penile sensation? Being circumcised?
I've heard that argument. I'm not sure if it's true. Mind you, okay, let's assume for the purpose of the argument that it is true. There are people who would argue, of course, that it's a lot better than thinking about Margaret Thatcher.
Well, of course, yeah. It,
more pleasurable during sex to not think about Margaret Thatcher than to find some other way to be less sensitive.
Okay,
point taken. There's just jokes running through my head about being insensitive during sex.
Oh dear. But of course, it's very hard to actually test the sensitivity before and after unless you're an adult who's had it done.
True.
If you had it done as a baby, you don't know any different. If you've not had it done as a baby, you don't know any different until you have it done as an adult, I would think. So it's a subjective thing that you probably need to test for yourself. Only if you haven't had it done. But only if you haven't had it done. If you had it done, you can't test it.
Well,
if it's been done to you, you can't test it. As a baby, that choice has been taken away from you.
And you're starting to make it sound like I've got some kind of moral obligation to do science now.
This is not the kind of science I think we need to do at the moment.
I remember when we had this discussion at school. And
you had this discussion at school?
The religious education teacher was talking about circumcision.
Ah.
And briefly kind of discussed some of the issues that we've discussed. You know, ideas of sensation and you know, possible reasons why the meme might have originated. And he says, and there are also some hygiene issues involved as well. And the class clown piped up, "What kind of hygiene issues do you mean?" And the teacher was just like, "Well, you know, just hygiene. It's just conducive to better hygiene." And he goes, "Precisely what do you mean, sir? So what do you mean? How do you mean?" Eventually, the class jock shouted up, "It means when you get cheesy."
Well, it is true you don't get that when you're circumcised.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. Oh. Do these conversations always have to descend?
There's also female circumcision.
There is, and I'm completely against that, I'm afraid.
Well, there's no health benefit. There's
for a start, it's mangling the Latin beyond belief.
There is the linguistic argument against it, yes, Dave.
Yes.
Linguistic atrocity.
It should just be scission. Yeah.
Indeed.
Particularly, I mean, we're talking about clitorectomy, right?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, that's just... I mean, talk about reducing sensation. Just I can't imagine a world without clitorises being better than a world with them. Sorry.
Yeah, but you're not thinking with a religious mind, are you?
Well, of course not. If I was thinking of a religious mind, I'd never think of clitorises at all.
I think that's a lie. What's his name? Cardinal Murphy Cormac Murphy O'Connor? He was thinking about them all the time, wasn't he?
Was he really?
He had a family in the US that he was maintaining, a family
did
in Ireland
he really?
Was
oh, I didn't know
I think that,
that
was the cardinal's name. It might be a different cardinal. I might have just libeled one that didn't do that at all. But
oh,
it was an Irish bishop or cardinal that was maintaining a family
No.
Bishop Casey.
That was it. Cormac Murphy O'Connor is the British head of...
I hereby apologise to Cormac Murphy O'Connor for libeling him.
He's also got a wonderful... It's just the most wonderfully Irish name in the world, isn't it? Hmm. Cormac Murphy O'Connor.
That's what made me think of it. He was the most Irish person I could think of at that
point. I've forgotten the other argument for circumcision of men.
The other argument for? Aesthetic.
So he'll look like his daddy. Now, there's a lot of other visible differences between father and son. I would have thought, at minimum, there's pubic hair. So should fathers shave themselves so they don't look different to their sons? Or should small boys be forced to wear pubic wigs?
Grown men should shave their pubic hair
so they don't look different.
No, that's not the reason. Just because it's gross, and because you know one should always do the courtesy one expects of one's partner. But again, that's another topic entirely.
Another topic for another day. And
once you've edited this podcast, I'm not going to be in it at all. Cormac Murphy O'Connor, by the way, likes atheists.
He says he likes atheists.
Cormac Murphy O'Connor, whose name I love saying, has urged Christians to treat atheists and agnostics with deep esteem because the hidden God is active in their lives as well as in the lives of those who believe.
I find that patronising.
Aye.
Condescending. That means talking down to people.
Does it really? The sneaky God?
Yeah.
The sneaky God.
But that's okay.
I know the scientific theory you're alluding to.
But the hidden God is active in my life even though he's going to burn me forever. In hell. Yes. Anyway, clitorectomy.
Hadn't we moved on from clitorectomy to the aesthetic argument for circumcision?
The aesthetic argument, yes.
Because clitorectomy makes us feel uncomfortable.
Okay.
not as half as it makes the women feel, but, you know.
Yeah. Hmm. I don't think it looks nice, but...
We were discussing, and sex I'll guiltily admit this earlier, and we were discussing Sex in the City, and I admit that I have not seen that particular episode.
Yes, there is an episode about circumcision where Charlotte, who of course eventually...
Which one is Charlotte?
Charlotte is the one who becomes Jewish during the season.
Is she the red-headed one?
She's the brunette.
The brunette. The dim one.
Yes.
Okay. Right,
she's
that's Charlotte.
She's the pretty one, isn't she?
is the one. She's not the complete moose.
Yeah, she's the one who's not a complete moose.
Right. I forgot the actress's name.
But anyway,
so she has a boyfriend who she likes very, very much, but she's turned off by the fact that he's not circumcised, and that's what she likes in a man. It's one of those, it's personal preference. You can't be right or wrong as a woman what you prefer in with a circumcised or not circumcised penis. But in her case, she actually persuades the guy that he should do it. So he does, and he realizes that, well, lots of women turned him down in the past because he wasn't circumcised, because they all had the same fetish. And now that he's had it done, he wants to catch up on lost time, so he's not willing to stay in a committed relationship with her.
Surely the entire premise of that is slightly fallacious, that episode.
I think in that part of America, perhaps. Mm. I mean, look, in 1999, as part of Diffusion Science Radio, I went on the streets to ask people, I did a vox pop, to ask them whether or not what they preferred in their men, whether they preferred circumcised or uncircumcised penises, just as a personal preference.
Ah.
I walked along Oxford Street asking men and women what they preferred. And
do you have the statistics from this that we could do a regression on?
Alas, no. But what I found was, look, you can't be right or wrong. We ended up, there was a woman in the studio on the night that we broadcast the show, and I asked her. Her personal preference was for circumcised men. Now, that was just what she likes. She's not right or wrong, it's just what she likes. But I did my story on the history of it with Kellogg and all the other things and the HIV and so forth. We got a caller.
Right.
We don't get a lot of calls into Diffusion, but we got a call, and the caller wanted to complain. And I thought he was going to complain about my story because, you know, it had a bit of a sexual edge. It was going against the cultural tradition of circumcision and so forth. No, he wanted to complain about this woman's sexual preference of circumcised men because he was part of some anti-circumcision lobby.
Right. Did you explain gently to him that his personal preference has no bearing on her personal preference?
And that there's no...
Please politely bugger off.
You can't be wrong. If you prefer strawberry to chocolate, whatever your preference is, whatever you like, you can't be wrong.
If anything's a sort of an irrational emotional choice, it's aesthetics. We discussed earlier on, my irrational edge is cars and things like, and music. I'm completely irrational about these things. I try and be as rational as I can in many other fields of my life.
There are other things,
but
you...
I'm clueless where it comes to cars. I go, I want that one.
You can have a Prince Albert done, for example.
Yes,
that will alter your penis surgically, and some women really like that. And some men like that. So surely there's no great medical benefit there, but it's purely a personal preference. So if you like it, you can do it.
Stephen Fry tells a wonderful story about when the Spice Girls met Prince Charles.
Yeah.
I can't remember if it's Prince Charles or the Duke of Edinburgh, but it doesn't matter.
I think it was Charles.
And the Spice Girls say, so is it true that Prince Albert had a Prince Albert? And Charles said, I'm afraid I don't know what you mean. What is a Prince Albert? And Stephen Fry had to step in and say, it's an item of jewellery worn by a gentleman in an intimate area, sir.
Yeah, that was Prince Charles. There's pictures of the ginger Jerry Halliwell embarrassing him muchly, and Charles glowing red. I would have thought that man couldn't be embarrassed by anything given his embracing of homeopathy and such nonsense.
Yes, and wanting to be Camilla Parker Bowles' tampon.
Oh, what a great phone call. You can find that, I'm pretty sure, on the internet.
As far as phone calls go, it's right up there with Bill O'Reilly wanting to...
Classic.
...wanting to rub a female staffer with a falafel.
I'm not convinced he knew what a falafel was.
No, he thought he was talking about a loofah when he called it that falafel thing that I'm going to rub your pussy with. good old Bill O' the Clown.
So, like circumcision, all things for adults.
Indeed. Now, to close out, I've pulled up a Wikipedia page in front of me here. Have you heard of the Holy Prepuce?
I have.
Isn't it Prepuce?
The Holy Prepuce.
Isn't that a relic?
Also known as the Holy Foreskin. Well, there are several, apparently, foreskins of Jesus hanging around.
How many penises did he have?
Well, he was the Son of God.
Is that sort of like the multi-armed deities in Hindu?
It could well be.
But, you know, multi-penises? I mean, this Christianity is a weird thing.
Is it Shiva with the multi-arms?
Right, so how many different prepuces are there?
I'm trying to determine a total from the Wikipedia. Depending on what you read, there are 8, 12, 14, or even 18 different holy foreskins in various European towns during the Middle Ages.
There's
one in Rome, obviously at the Vatican, which I guess they think is the real one. But there are a whole bunch scattered through France, and there's one that says here, there's one in Stoke-on-Trent.
Charming, like if you were Jesus, you leave your foreskin in Stoke. I left my foreskin in Stoke-on-Trent. Yeah. It lends itself to a new curse word, though, doesn't it? Holy 18 donk Jesus.
So, have I got the story wrong? I thought the idea was that outside of, you know, the whole manger thing with the visiting three kings, which everyone, you know,
which we all know, ignored immediately after. Very well described.
Wasn't he
in the
supposed
Bible?
To have been raised in a sort of normal childhood, and he only comes back into the Bible at age 30 when he's a teacher?
The Jesus, the hidden years, same as Sherlock Holmes. Actually, we know about Sherlock Holmes' early education, but
wouldn't
we
you
don't
think?
See him until he raised
wouldn't you think
in London at the Royal London Hospital?
So, you're a rabbi at the time, and you do this traditional circumcision because, after all, Jesus, Joseph, and Mary are all Jewish. So that's why he gets circumcised in the first place, because if he wasn't Jewish, he wouldn't get it done at that time, because it wasn't that popular. And, in fact, it was only done by Jews at the time. And so why would he have kept the prepuce anyway? Because it was just some baby, you know?
Well, Mary did have an inkling that he wasn't just some baby when the angel came down.
She stashed it away.
But they don't normally ask you if you want to keep it.
Well, she...
maybe like an appendix.
Maybe she just said, don't chuck it away.
I want to put it under the pillow for the foreskin fairy.
Yeah. No, I'll just save it till later because it might prove important.
And did it prove important?
Well,
where's it been used in history?
Seems to well, the Stoke-on-Trent tourist industry is doing fine out of it, I'll have you know.
Do they keep toenail clippings as well?
Jesus,
as a relic.
There's probably loads of Jesus toenails out there because he kept regenerating them as well. You know, maybe he kept regenerating foreskins. Maybe that's what it was.
He's Doctor
maybe
Who.
They circumcised him once and it kept growing back. Because he was perfect as he was. He was born perfect. And so when they cut a bit off him, he just regenerated the skin. Ah. Like that chick out of Heroes.
A complete rebuttal of the Jewish cultural preference then.
Yeah, well, maybe. Right. I don't know. Maybe they couldn't circumcise him. Maybe it just...
Maybe
back.
Like Superman, that the blade just sort of bounced off.
Yeah.
His Kryptonian skin.
Although the book of Luke tells us, and when 8 days were accomplished for the circumcising of the child, his name was called Jesus, which was so named of the angel before he was conceived in the womb.
Surely
which
he
is uttered
called Emmanuel.
That's what the...
After the 1970s porn films.
That's what the prophets said, you know, a baby shall be born, and he shall be called Emmanuel. And that's always offered as evidence that the boy called Jesus...
Well, hold on, you've forgotten the other part of the prophecy, is that the prophet would come, right? Because this is supposed to be the Messiah. The Messiah will come in the Old Testament.
Yeah, but slower than he would have otherwise if you had foreskin.
The Messiah is supposed to be the prophet Elijah, not Jesus. It's supposed to be Elijah. If you ever visit a Passover ceremony, which happens at Easter...
I'm glad I'm not a Christian. This is all too complicated.
It is. Well, this is the thing. This is why Christians aren't interested in the Old Testament.
They were that close to dumping the Old Testament. And they probably should have, you know, when they were having their...
Did.
When they were deciding on what was the canon, just like some fat, sweaty Star Trek geeks, they could have just said, no, that's non-canon, and avoided all these problems in the first place. But no, they didn't. There's actually, if you go to the Wikipedia page on the circumcision of Jesus, there's actually a painting of it.
There are stained glass windows of it.
Really worth seeing.
One of which was donated to Henry VIII, I think, if I read correctly.
There's a feast of the circumcision of Christ.
January the 1st, apparently.
I'm a little bit horrified.
Although apparently most of them were lost or destroyed during the Reformation and the French Revolution. So we no longer have the Holy Foreskin.
Were there any great miracles attributed to the Holy Foreskin?
Not that I can find. I think they just sat there in gold-encrusted boxes and were brought out occasionally.
That doesn't look anything like a baby.
Oh!
It looks Friedrich Herrlin doesn't seem to have painted a particularly
baby-like
baby.
We'll link to this in the
though.
Show notes, and you can decide whether this is a baby.
This is supposed to be
baby.
An 8-day-old baby, but it looks like a shrunken man.
What's his name? Warwick.
Warwick Davis.
Warwick Davis.
The theology.
Star of Harry Potter. That's it. It looks like Professor Flitwick.
They're saying the circumcision of Jesus has traditionally been seen as the first time the blood of Christ was shed, and thus the beginning of the process of the redemption of man and demonstration that Christ was fully human and have his obedience to biblical law, unlike every Christian who came after.
So the ability to bleed is what determines you as fully human?
No. The ability,
because I was going to say that the movie Predator teaches us otherwise. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
The blood of Christ is supposed to be the redemptive thing, right? Because it's a blood sacrifice.
Uh-huh.
But the other thing is, so that's one thing is the blood of Christ, but the other thing is supposed to be that Christ is fully human, because that's an important part of the theology.
Yes.
He's both human and not human
except
at the same
time. Humans don't come back after 2 days.
No. And if they do, then they weren't dead. That's the definition, really.
Hmm. Still, theological problems aside, this has been a very interesting podcast on the subject of circumcision.
We don't really have a punchline for this, do we?
We don't.
No.
Although, I would like to say that I was invited last night on the Facebook thread that started all of this to call the Jewish cultural preference stupid. And I'd just like to say this. What's not stupid about cutting the end of your cock off because Magic Man in the Sky will then love you?
Thank you. South Park. South Park covered the topic of circumcision because Kyle's family are Jewish. And their explanation was you're having the tip.
Oh, purling. Oh, we're talking more about body modification now. Look at the purling page.
On South Park, it's having the tip cut off to make it look bigger.
Is that what it is?
That's what they say on South Park.
Well, I think you should just shave off the hair.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say goodbye from me, Jason Brown, and from Dave the Happy Singer.
Goodbye.
And Ian Wolfe.
Bye.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Well, so much for heaven, so much for paradise. If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice. So much for the angels, so much for glory. If the prophets had seen you coming, they'd have written a different story. So if you're sticking here till the end of time, I'm sorry mate, I think I'll be off. There's a bloke in purgatory as advertised, the spare room in his lot. So much for the blessed, so much for the afterlife, an ever-ending stretch of tedium and strife. And the tales of Nirvana are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you. So much for heaven.